Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
On this episode of Newt's World, President Joe Biden signed Congress's $1.2 trillion spending package on March 23, 2024, which will keep the government funded through October 1st. Almost halfway into the fiscal year, the passage of the bill ends a month-long struggle in Congress to secure a permanent budget resolution instead of passing stopgap measures. Several of the last-minute measures nearly led to a government shutdown. But hidden within the pages of this 400-page bill are plenty of earmarks, also called pork barrel spending. That is when your representative in Congress requests direct government spending for projects in their district. Here to talk about the spending bill, I'm really pleased to welcome my guest, David Ditch. He is a senior policy analyst in the Grover M. Herman Center for the Budget at the Heritage Foundation. David, welcome, and thank you for joining me on Newt's World.
Thanks for having me.
Prior to joining Heritage, you were a budget analyst for the Senate Budget Committee, where you oversaw appropriations. With that background, will you walk us through the general process of funding the federal government every year?
Sure. So typically, the first step is that federal agencies put together documents in conjunction with the presidential administration, and they end up putting together what's called the president's budget. This provides Congress with lots of information about both the functioning of the agencies, what they're doing, how they've been using the money, and also what the administration would like to prioritize. Traditionally, Congress uses the agency guidance to help inform them, but they tend to ignore what the president is asking for unless the president and Congress are both controlled by the same party, which this year is obviously not the case when you have Joe Biden sitting in the Oval Office and Republicans having taken over the House of Representatives. After this, ideally, both the House and the Senate will produce budget resolutions to determine how they're going to spend money for the following year. But unfortunately, that increasingly doesn't end up happening, especially when there's a party split between the House and the Senate. Republicans have tended to try to produce budget resolutions responsibly. Democrats tend to see that as a technical issue that they aren't overly concerned about. But one way or another, Congress ends up establishing a spending level, and then a portion of the spending called discretionary spending, which is what funds the normal operation of federal agencies like the Department of Defense, the Department of Health and Human Services, and so on, the what are called appropriation committees use the budgetary limits that have been established and figure out how they want to divide up this part of the federal budget between all the different agencies and programs. Of course, what's unfortunate is that the portion of the federal budget that Congress spends the most time on is becoming a smaller and smaller portion of what the federal government spends. Because in addition to these discretionary programs, there are also mandatory programs that operate almost entirely on autopilot. So, for example, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, these programs take up an increasing share of the federal budget and are growing very rapidly relative to the size of the economy.
Let me stop you for a second, because I understand why, for example, Social Security or Medicare is hard to touch. But why are food stamps mandatory?
That's a very good question. To me, we should try to determine how to prioritize what the federal government does across the board. There shouldn't be certain things that are off limits. As you mentioned, food stamps are considered mandatory. Congress should be able to say, based on the economic conditions, we think this is an appropriate amount of money to spend, and tell the executive branch and tell the states, okay, we want you to spend this money based on these guidelines. But it's easier for the elected officials to move as many things as they can off to the side, put them on autopilot so that they don't have to worry about them.
But of course, that just means you have escalators that are uncontrollable that go up every year.
Kicking the can down the road has been sort of the default in a lot of areas of federal policy for a long time now. And that's part of why the hole that we are in right now has gotten so deep.
So you have those things which are already permanently funded, in effect, often with an escalator clause attached either to number of people or other kind of things, for the inflation rate, for example. Then you have what's called discretionary, which is the amount that is relatively easy for Congress to control, except that it doesn't control it. Explain that to us. I mean, why have we been on this steady upward cycle, which I sort of understood during COVID, but I thought COVID was going to be kind of a peak and then we would go back down to the norm. And the Democrats have managed to turn it into a plateau. And we're now spending, I think, a bigger share of money through the federal government than ever in American history.
So from about 2000 through to 2020, interest rates on the national debt were steadily going down. And a lot of members of Congress and most of the presidential administrations over that time saw that to mean that it was a free lunch. They could spend whatever they want. They could add whatever they wanted to the national debt, and there weren't going to be consequences. And they went as far as they could. And then after the pandemic happened, after what I determined to be a $7.5 trillion spending spree, that's trillion with a T, they went so overboard, debt markets were not able to absorb all of it, which has led to not only higher interest rates on the national debt, interest rates we haven't seen in many years, leading to the cost of maintaining the national debt hitting record levels. But the overspending also, I believe, was the number one factor driving the inflation that we saw in 2021 and 2022, and the reason why inflation is still so much higher today. The interest rates might never come back down. Unfortunately, so many members of Congress feel entitled to a certain amount of spending every year on all their different pet programs and all their handouts to all their special interests, they can't even conceive of getting rid of even the smallest programs. One of my favorite examples is that there's a special program within the Department of Agriculture to subsidize maple syrup, which pretty much just goes to the state of Vermont. If you were to say, okay, the federal government has tens of trillions of dollars in debt, Social Security and Medicare are going to go bankrupt in the next decade. What can the American people afford to get rid of within the federal government? I feel like something like the maple syrup program would be pretty easy to just sort of lop off, but nothing can ever be allowed to go away. Nothing ever gets eliminated. And because every few years, especially when Democrats are in power, you have new bureaucracies being created, new programs, and those always operate indefinitely. Even the so-called discretionary side of the spending equation, that keeps going up and up and up.
So in a sense, save our syrup program becomes a major battle cry.
Yeah.
So we have a maple syrup program. Do we have a molasses program?
I don't know that we do, but I'm sure there's something comparable in there. So on the one hand, there are some people, when they talk about the federal budget, all they want to talk about are the benefit programs. But I believe that there's not a proper understanding of what's going on inside a lot of these federal agencies, the kind of damage that's being done. I've done some research over the last few months looking at agencies like the Department of Education, the National Science Foundation, that are promoting a lot of deeply radical left-wing ideology, the critical race theory, transgender ideology aimed at children. These are parts of the federal government where if you ask the average person what these agencies are doing, it's not going to seem like they're controversial. But when you look at how they're operating now, especially under the Biden administration, it's not just that they're wasting tax dollars. It's that they're using tax dollars to undermine America's fundamental values. And in turn, these are agencies that, through the discretionary spending process, have been steadily getting more and more and more money with bipartisan support year after year.
If you would, David, tell me about some of the more outrageous earmarks that you found.
There were two earmarks, one that goes to a group in Rhode Island, another that goes to a group in New Hampshire. The way that they're labeled is very inoffensive. But then when you look at what these groups actually do, these are organizations that provide late-term abortions. And this is over $2 million taxpayer dollars going to these organizations. Even if the money isn't directly for abortions, money is fungible. And the federal support for these organizations, helping to keep the doors open and keep the lights on, means that taxpayers are de facto subsidizing these abortions.
Well, I think it's particularly egregious when you start talking about late term, you know, in the eighth and ninth month, sometimes even on the last day. It's just remarkable.
Yeah. And obviously, there remains a very heated debate about abortion, about what the legal status should be in the country. But I feel like at a bare minimum, we should be able to agree that people shouldn't be forced to go against their conscience. People who are pro-life shouldn't be forced by the IRS to provide their hard-earned tax dollars to the federal government and then have the federal government turn around and, you know, help prop up abortionists.
Why are Republicans so weak on controlling government?
You have some Republicans, the more conservative wing, who are willing to go to the mat on spending. Unfortunately, there's only so many of them. When you head more towards the left flank of the GOP, you have many members who are not just passively willing to accept a bigger government. You have many members who actively enjoy seeing the federal government grow, seeing these federal bureaucracies obtain more power, obtain more control over more parts of our day-to-day lives. Frankly, I don't understand the appeal. Some of these members who will talk about how wonderful business investment is, how important it is to have a pro-growth tax code, they'll say that on one hand. Then on the other hand, you look at the legislation that they're supporting, whether it becomes law or in some cases even it doesn't become law. But they consistently also support growing the federal behemoth, deepening the swamp in Washington, D.C. They're going against what they claim to be in favor of. But ultimately, one of the saddest realities about Washington is the easiest way to tell whether a piece of legislation is going to become law is if it increases spending and has Republican support.
You know, everybody has their own wellness routine, their own approach to a healthy lifestyle. A lot of the most successful ones include herbs like ginger root, ashwagandha, and so many others. Nature's Way has been sourcing herbs like those for over 50 years. They understand that nature is the ultimate problem solver, so they're dedicated to providing plant-powered formulas to help people live healthier lives. Their herbs can support your health in so many ways. For instance, ginger root and slippery elm bark have both been used for centuries all over the world. Ginger root has traditionally been used to soothe occasional digestive upset, and slippery elm bark to soothe the GI tract. St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support, which is something we can all use in our modern life. I mean, these herbs come from all over the world, but Nature's Way knows where the best ones grow. They test for potency in their state-of-the-art lab, and their scientists are experts in all things herbs. What's on the label is what's in your bottle, and what's in your bottle are the best herbs around. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The bill H.R. 4366 had about $459 billion in discretionary spending for fiscal year 2024 across 12 federal departments and agencies. That bill includes over 6,600 projects requested by individual lawmakers. Isn't that almost an explosion of pork?
This is one of the biggest tragedies of the last few years, I believe, is that Congress had actually taken a step towards being more responsible. They had decided on a bipartisan basis to get rid of these pork barrel projects entirely. And then as soon as Democrats took control in 2021, the earmarks came back, and unfortunately, bringing them back has also had bipartisan support. You even had a majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives, I believe last year, voted to keep this in place. And while Republicans tend to be using these line item spending measures to support fairly routine things like highway expansions or work on inland waterways, unfortunately, that gives the green light for Democrats to spend on what they're most interested in. And so oftentimes, what the Democrats are interested in is promoting far-left ideology on things like critical race theory, things like the LGBTQ agenda. And again, it's one thing if a private individual or a private entity wants to promote these ideas. It's a free country. I really resent when they're using public tax dollars, and I resent it even more when they're spending money we don't have.
But what you have here is borrowing money in order to spend the money on propaganda that the government launches at you. So in a sense, you're paying for your own indoctrination.
Yeah, that is absolutely the case. So one example, Senator Van Hollen of Maryland secured a $500,000 earmark for the NAACP, which once had somewhat of a noble mission back in the 1960s civil rights movement, but which is now almost entirely devoted to promoting racial animosity. This is a group that is extremely partisan in how it operates. It's a de facto wing of the Democratic Party. It has no business receiving 1 cent of taxpayer dollars, and yet they're getting half a million taxpayer dollars.
The list just sort of goes on and on and on about where money's being spent. And is it largely just sort of, I take care of your district, you take care of mine?
When you look at how a lot of middle-of-the-road Republicans are, who are on board with their marks, I think that's how they're viewing it. Because, again, they aren't quite as deeply ideologically driven. They're looking at it in terms of, oh, my district might need help resurfacing a road, and my district will get this money, so in turn, we'll let this Democratic district have some money. The Democrats are being much more strategic with how they want to use these taxpayer dollars. They fund what I call the infrastructure of the left, which means all these left-wing institutions, both inside and outside of government. I think there are times where everyday Americans might be looking at what's in the news and saying, why are there organizations that are paying people to block highways? Why are there organizations that are promoting transgender ideology in our schools? Why are there all these groups protesting in the streets in support of Hamas terrorists? This is all possible because the far left has institutions that fund radical activists. And unfortunately, the moderate Republicans have signed off on giving Democrats slush funds to work with. And then the Democrats use our tax dollars to fund these left-wing institutions. It's something that has got to stop.
Part of the side effect of this is that the national debt now is up to $34.5 trillion, which is really pretty staggering. The federal debt, it keeps going up. And you go back 100 years, it was $403 billion, and that, frankly, included part of the World War I costs because it was going down at the time. And now it's jumped all the way up into the $34.5 trillion. And it seems to me when you have that big a debt, then you have a huge interest payment on the debt. And if interest rates keep going up, the federal government is the largest debtor in the world, so its interest payments are going to go up. I mean, doesn't this become a dangerous cycle?
It absolutely does. We're likely going to spend over $1 trillion on interest on the national debt, which is somewhere around $6,000 for every household in the country just this year, just to maintain the national debt where it is. And it's not as though this is paying down the debt, because the national debt is going to be increasing by around $1.5 to $2 trillion every single year moving forward indefinitely, which is completely unsustainable. It's absolutely possible for interest rates to have a sudden spike because the global markets for buying the U.S. debt can only afford to buy so much. And if interest rates go much higher than they are, very quickly you would see just interest payments on the debt absorbing all of the income tax dollars that the U.S. economy produces every single year. And in that case, we're not going to have money for covering the other core expenses of the federal government, like veterans benefits, like national defense. Also, the higher the interest payments go, the more deficit spending we have, and the more deficit spending we have, the harder it's going to be to ever start catching up on all the economic gains that we've lost to inflation over the last couple of years.
It seems to me that one of the great problems is that the Federal Reserve is trying to use interest rates, which primarily affect the private sector. But if you have a government pouring over $1 trillion a year in unpaid for spending, they're going to inflate the amount of currency that's available at the very time that the Federal Reserve is trying to constrain it. So you end up with a very, very heavy bias towards crushing the private sector while expanding the government sector, which is part of why I think 40% of all new jobs have actually been directly or indirectly tied to the government. But isn't this whole problem of very large deficit spending almost inevitably inflationary?
It absolutely is. And you're right about the cost to the private sector. The higher borrowing costs mean there's going to be a lot less private investment, which is going to reduce economic growth. It's going to reduce job creation. We're caught in a bind as long as Washington keeps avoiding fiscal responsibility. Right now, we've got both high interest rates and elevated inflation. If you try to lower interest rates, that's going to get you higher inflation. If you try to push harder against inflation and raise interest rates even further, you risk crashing the economy altogether. The only way to fix it so that we can start bringing interest rates down, by the way, another big problem with high interest rates is it's now very difficult for young families to afford to buy a home. And that means we're going to have fewer young families, fewer babies, and that only makes everything worse down the road in terms of our budget problems. Everything just compounds on itself. The longer we wait to take action on bringing the size and scope of the federal government back to a realistic size, the harder the solutions are going to be.
So the longer we go down this road, the more painful it's going to get to be. But at the same time, the more difficult any kind of corrective action becomes.
Yes.
In your mind, and from your background as an analyst, did you see anything in the recent bill that begins to move towards less spending?
There are a small number of specific programs in federal bureaus that either had their spending frozen, which you could view as a reduction when you adjust for inflation. There's also a few small areas that were cut. By and large, what this spending bill does is keeps things frozen in place. The problem is that the year before, there was a huge spending increase. So if you compare the most recent bill to where things were just 2 years ago, it's still a very real spending increase overall. And again, we're in a place where we can't really afford spending increases anywhere.
You know, everybody has their own wellness routine, their own approach to a healthy lifestyle. A lot of the most successful ones include herbs like ginger root, ashwagandha, and so many others. Nature's Way has been sourcing herbs like those for over 50 years. They understand that nature is the ultimate problem solver, so they're dedicated to providing plant-powered formulas to help people live healthier lives. Their herbs can support your health in so many ways. For instance, ginger root and slippery elm bark have both been used for centuries all over the world. Ginger root has traditionally been used to soothe occasional digestive upset, and slippery elm bark to soothe the GI tract. St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support, which is something we can all use in our modern life. I mean, these herbs come from all over the world, but Nature's Way knows where the best ones grow. They test for potency in their state-of-the-art lab, and their scientists are experts in all things herbs. What's on the label is what's in your bottle, and what's in your bottle are the best herbs around. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
at the Heritage Foundation, you've been developing a budget reform program. I mean, what are your recommendations for Congress to address budget reform?
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. The Heritage Foundation has what we call a budget blueprint that would dramatically reduce wasteful spending across the board. We have, I believe, about 180 different spending reduction options right now. There's so much of the federal apparatus that everyday Americans get absolutely no benefit from whatsoever. So the Heritage Budget Plan would not only reduce lots of wasteful parts of the federal bureaucracy, would also make Social Security and Medicare survive rather than go bankrupt. It would also reform the tax code because there's a lot of what's essentially spending is done through the tax code, so enabling us to maintain a pro-growth tax code. This plan would really benefit in terms of economic growth while also making sure that the country doesn't go broke.
But you also have some pretty dramatic reforms, such as repealing the Davis-Bacon Act, which has been there, what, since the 1930s?
Yeah, there are programs that the Heritage Foundation has been going after since it was founded in the 1970s. The Davis-Bacon Act, which requires that projects receiving federal funding have to utilize essentially union-mandated wages. There's also something similar on work rules. This is something that I honestly don't know why Republicans have been willing to sign off on it for so many generations. But what ends up happening is it prevents contractors who aren't unionized from bidding on government projects. You have a smaller number of bidders who are able to then demand higher prices. So then when the federal government is funding a project, that means that project is going to cost a lot more. It's going to tend to take longer to get completed. Another thing this does is it undermines the right to work states, which is now a majority of the country, because there's no right to work when the federal government gets involved.
So in a sense, this is a good example where prices are made more expensive. The competitive pool is much smaller. And one of the places mentioned to look at is rebuilding the bridge in Baltimore and whether or not all these things apply to make it more expensive and more difficult and make it take longer.
That's a very important bridge. And while I generally am someone who doesn't think the federal government should get involved, if the federal government was in a position to make the bridge construction go faster and make that process happen more smoothly, that's something that might be worth spending a little bit of money on. There's a couple problems there, of course. Number one, they don't need to pass additional spending. They just passed a huge infrastructure program a couple years ago. The money is already there. They just need to draw from it. But then, of course, on the other side, you have all the red tape about what businesses are able to bid, where the materials are allowed to come from. And then in turn, the Biden administration imposes lots of mandates on infrastructure programs that have nothing to do with any law Congress passed related to things like diversity, equity, inclusion, environmental justice, racial justice, climate change. When you add all that red tape together, we're spending multiple times more than we need to on the projects. They take years longer than they need to. I mean, right now, the expectation is rebuilding this bridge would take 10 years, even though the initial construction only took 5 years. That's absolutely not how we should be doing things in America.
I just did a newsletter at Gingrich 360 on rebuilding the Baltimore Bridge. And we've had some examples, one in Minneapolis, that was remarkably fast, got the job done. The Northridge earthquake, when Governor Wilson was in charge in California, got the job done remarkably fast. You can do it, but it requires breaking out of the mindset of federal red tape and federal regulatory overreach. And it will be interesting to see whether or not the Biden people decide that getting Baltimore back to work is more important than filling out the next 10,000 pages of regulations. And I think that's going to be a big discussion over the next few weeks for that very reason, because it involves so many jobs. And the other thing I've been pushing is they should insist that the shipping company and its insurance companies pay for the bridge. This is a clear case where you have somebody who's responsible. And while I think we might loan them the money to keep moving while we fight over it, I think this should be a specific goal of trying to get the total cost of the bridge repair done by the people who are responsible for hitting the bridge, which fits perfectly in insurance law.
Absolutely. The federal government wasn't operating the ship. The state of Maryland wasn't operating the ship. A private company was operating the ship. They have the primary responsibility. And while it might take a few years for different lawsuits to determine whether it's going to be the ship owner or the people who are responsible for the crew, who exactly bears the private side responsibility, we don't have a couple years to sit around waiting for the legal process to sort out. We do want to get the rebuilding process started. But absolutely, I think it's really important for the federal government to keep its eye on the ball and make sure the taxpayers are paid back by the companies involved.
We could loan the money to an organization set up to build the bridge with the understanding that that organization would then take whatever legal steps are necessary for the shipping company and the insurance companies to get the money back for the taxpayers. And just that attitude would be a good step towards moving back towards a balanced budget, which, as you know, I helped author the only 4 balanced budgets in your lifetime. So I know it can be done, but it takes a totally different attitude and, frankly, a lot of mental toughness in order to get it done. David, I want to thank you for joining me. I want to encourage our listeners to go to heritage.org to read your latest articles analyzing the spending bill, the earmarks within it. I think it is so important for us as a country to realize that we will never lower the federal debt unless we curtail spending, and another moratorium on earmarks would be a great first step.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to my guest, David Ditch. You can read more about the earmarks in the $1.2 trillion spending bill on our show page at NewsWorld.com. NewsWorld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Garnsey Sloan, and our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying NewsWorld, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcast and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of NewsWorld can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is NewsWorld.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.